This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, signature support from the office of East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor President, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow and Renee Martin producing, and we lead off with our monthly visit from Mary Stein of the East Baton Rouge Parish Library. They are an underwriter for WRKF, and good morning to you, Mary.
Good morning, Jim.
It's always nice to to see the most cheerful person in Baton Rouge. I would have given that moniker to Smiley Andrews, who we'll hear from a little bit later.
Yeah.
He was appropriately named, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And I remember him visiting the library with his book. And I also, of course, browsed his column every day for interesting facts and maybe perhaps made-up stories about our fair city.
Well, years from now, historians will go to those two books with Smiley Andrews, and they'll find out a lot about Baton Rouge. And never was a man more aptly named than Smiley Gray Andrews. I remember that line was once used for Joe Don Looney, a crazy football player. His name was Looney, and he was. But Smiley was a man of great cheer, and we'll hear from him a little bit later. And
that's marvelous.
And he hung out at libraries, and he loved to tell the story about his weekend at a nudist colony in Slidell.
Oh, gosh.
You know, he went there to do a story, and he had his clothes on, and everybody was looking at him like he was weird. Mm-hmm. So he took his clothes off, and he joined the fun. That's Smiley.
That's a true journalist.
But I suspect everybody is clothed at the library, because, as we know, only good things happen there. People learn. My mother used to like to come to the LSU library with me because she says, I can feel people learning.
Oh, yeah. It's palpable, Jim.
It is.
And in the summer, summer reading, we will bribe your kids, your teens, and even your adults to keep reading and to really lean into the idea that, of course, I think reading is its own reward, but if we have to bribe the kids along the way, sure. But the wonderful programs and activities to go along with it to build that habit of reading and that love for the idea of learning in the home.
We're visiting with Mary Stein, Assistant Director of the Library, graduate of Louisiana State University.
Go Tigers!
There you go. 877-217-5757. And talk at talklouisiana.org. And you've had many luminaries at the library through the years, and they often come there. And some actually, like Coach John Robinson, Coach Pete Richardson, they are regulars in the library well into retirement, but enjoying the solitude and the knowledge and the books. There are still books in the East Baton Rouge Parish Library, aren't there?
Books are still the brand. But the one thing is, we don't care whether you're going to consume that book in print or ebook format, whether you're listening to a book on CD or Playaway, or you're downloading it to your car and driving around with it. They all count as books. And I'm going to also tell you, adults sometimes have this leftover from school. If you start a book and you don't like it, you have my permission to stop reading it and let us help you find one that will keep your interest through that car trip.
Ask for Mary Stein.
That's right. You have our permission. We want you to find the books that work for you at wherever you are, whatever you're interested in, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, whether it's something that will help you professionally, build your skills, be wonderful for your family. It's all about growing capacity for the human beings in our fair city.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And obviously, a couple of listeners, and we discussed this briefly, I want to know how you fared in the session. There was, I know, a bill you opposed that was accepted by the legislature and signed by the governor. What's that one about?
Well, House Bill 974, proposed out of the Lafayette area by Representative Carlson, basically said that you don't need to be a librarian to run the library, to be the library director. And then at the last minute, they added on an extra caveat from a bill that did not make it out of committee, where the local governing board has the power to, without cause and without a process, remove members of the Library Board of Control. These are members that they themselves appointed, and they represent the citizens of the community. So those were problematic for us. Here in Baton Rouge, we have a wonderful board. We have our Metro Council cares about the library, so it perhaps won't affect us, but it's sad for other parishes.
Again, 877-217-5757. John in Broadmoor, you're on with Mary Stein. Hi, John.
Good morning, folks. I had the pleasure of hearing Mary at Broadmoor Methodist Church a couple of weeks ago, her presentation, and my favorite slide had a line that said, "Reading about a frog doesn't make you a frog." That pretty much says it all, and I wish that we could kind of get that message to some of our knuckleheaded Louisiana legislators that apparently don't understand that very, very simple concept.
All right.
Thank you, John. Yeah, we need to have a nice depth and breadth of items in the collection, things that will appeal to all. And then you as an adult can decide what you want. And you as an adult parent can decide what's right for you and your family. But it's important for us to provide the material. Thank you, John. It was fun talking with y'all.
All right. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hello, Phil. You're on with Mary. Good morning.
Yes, sir. I know part of my childhood was being able to go to the bookmobile that traveled around the housing project in New Orleans. As a matter of fact, there was one that came to St. Louis, those St. Louis apartments that we were living in then, and that was a breath of sunshine for my life, and I have regarded books as treasures, and I could see that there's a list of banned books on Florida. We're lucky we live in Louisiana right now, I guess.
That's right. That's right. And the bookmobile's still rolling here. It does visit housing communities. It visit daycares, preschools, and congregate senior living communities, retirement centers. So we're out and about. If you can't come to us, we try to come to you.
All right. Well, tell us more about summer reading. Thank you, Phil.
Oh, summer reading. So first of all, adults, you can join too. And when you do join, you're going to get this great bag, because adults are always wanting new tote bags, put their physical books and DVDs in. You're going to get some nice swag, and every three books that adults read, you're going to get your name drawn, put in the hat for the big drawing, where we have some lovely prizes donated by area merchants and our friends of the library. But the big news is to keep the kids reading, so they sign up, and for every couple of books they read, their name goes into weekly drawings, and we have fabulous programs, free programs at all locations. And by the way, I'm still allowed to use the word free. That bill did not get out of the legislature. We're going to have everything from dance, ballet, the theater, Professor Universe, Snake ID, goes with our theme of adventure, Harvey Rabbit and Friends, Mama Sabah, right. Dinosaurs, all kinds of things at all locations, not just the main library. And you can find all about it in the source.
Another listener notes, we've complimented you and your staff for the number of library cards in East Baton Rouge Parish, one of the highest proportions anywhere in the country, but there is a new wrinkle, isn't there?
That's right, and it was really sad for me. On Saturday, we froze, we blocked 126,835 cards. These are cards of minor children ages 0 through 17. The cards aren't burnt up, you know. All we need is for the parent or legal guardian to contact us and reaffirm that their child can either keep the card they have, their regular standard card, or come in person and get a different card, a more restrictive card or a less restrictive card. And I will tell you, of the 5,000 or so that have come in already, they're choosing the less restrictive card.
Okay. I think this is Lady Catherine in Spanish Town.
Oh, Lady K.
Good morning.
Hey. Good morning. Good morning.
And
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Well,
I'm sorry for the community's loss and the family's loss.
Well,
it's a big loss.
Smiley would have lived a much shorter life without you, so thanks for taking such good care of him.
Oh, well, thank you, Jim. I just wanted to say good morning, Mary, And Jim, y'all have been great friends to him over the years, and I just wanted to acknowledge that and to say how important literacy and seeing that young children learn to read was important to him. So, anything that the family can do to help in that effort, if you want to put his name behind something, Mary, or, you know, however you want it to go, that would be great.
Oh, thank you, Lady Kay. I remember him helping us with things with the Advocate in the 80s when we were erasing illiteracy and our dinosaurs were at the mall talking about literacy, avoid extinction, learn to read. And he's such a friend to the community. Thank you.
And Lady Catherine, I know there'll be a celebration of his life at some point. So we look forward to talking with you sometime very soon. Thanks for calling in today. Certainly an honor to be associated with the late, great Smiley Gray Anders Jr.
You're welcome. I'm going to be listening.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. And we're wrapping it up with Mary Stein. Then is Mary Patricia Ray. Your number, 877-217-5757. Mary Stein is a person who effuses enthusiasm about the library system in East Baton Rouge Parish. And I do want to note that the 50th anniversary of the Scotlandville branch is this month. So there will be a celebration, as there should be. And certainly that's a busy place at this time of the year and at all points of a year.
That's right. Well, Scotlandville, actually, very exciting things are happening out there. So if you drop by on June 29th, when we have kind of an open house deal for the celebration of Scotlandville's anniversary, you're going to see a structure next to the real library that is quickly taking shape. You're going to see brick on a building that will become the temporary home of Scotlandville early next year, when we kind of move the staff over a little bit and then renovate the current building and push it out and push it back and do a great overhaul. So you'll be able to see the plans when you go, and it's very exciting.
All right. And another listener wants to know where she can pick up a copy of The Source, which is where you find out all about what's happening every month with the East Baton Rouge Parish Library.
Right. Well, it's available online and in print. So if you go to the website, ebrpl.com, you'll look in the upper right-hand corner and you can click on The Source. I like paper. So every library has copies, and we just got them in, and I order a few extra for June. So there are some wonderful blue copies of The Source scattered all over the parish.
All right. Thank you, Mary Stein. See you next month.
Yep.
We're joined now by Mary Patricia Ray, who's been at the state capitol for much of the last several months. There have been three sessions at least, and maybe more action to come. And today's headline in the Advocate: session ends with winners and losers. Social conservatives got notable victories. Governor gains more control. The push for a constitutional convention fails. What's your take, Mary Patricia?
Well, a very long 6 months since our first special session under this governor in January. And in our regular session this year, we had what a lot of us would refer to as a long session in even-numbered years. We do some work that's not fiscal in nature, so legislators can file more bills. There are more than 2,100 pieces of legislation filed in this session. And we, as usual, have some winners and some losers. I think, you always have to give it a couple months afterwards. There's going to be, I think, some legal challenges to several pieces of legislation that passed this year. And certainly social conservatives fed their base and will feed their base even if some of what they pass this session is overturned, which it's very likely to be.
What do you think is in danger of being overturned?
Oh, and look, with great respect for the authors that brought this legislation, I think it's pretty easy to look at historical trends in the courts and see that there's likely to be problems with bills around access to medication, specifically medication for abortion, that passed this year, bills that require schools to post the Ten Commandments. These are things that have been traditionally litigated. Other bills that maybe give too big of a chunk of an industry to just one one company or one person, I think we'll have some challenges based on that and other aspects of legislation that may infringe upon speech that we saw. Mm-hmm. I think someone's going to have to sue on whether you really have to be a Louisiana citizen to request public records. And I don't know that they'll be successful, but I think there'll be a lot of challenges in the courts.
How did the governor do?
You know, I think I was thinking about that this morning when I drove in here, Jim, and you know, they say, what's the cheesy line? You're only guaranteed to miss the shots you don't take. I think compared to past governors, Jeff Landry had an incredibly successful first session, despite the fact that things that were very important to him were either watered down or didn't happen. And why do I say that? Well, if we were talking about Bobby Jindal right now, for instance, we would really, whenever Bobby had one, he usually took on one centerpiece thing per session or two, you know, and if it failed, it was really big news, especially in the later years of his governorship when he was a lame duck and had a lot of trouble moving legislation. Jeff Landry has literally done so much volume that it's hard you can't even really dwell when he doesn't get what he wants because he's doing so much so fast that the wins are pretty notable. And the biggest thing we learned this session is that a supermajority in the legislature that's in the same party and has the same political views as you is not a magic wand, no matter who you are as the governor.
Well, he sat in the Senate chamber on at least one occasion for several hours.
Oh, he did some personal lobbying during this session on a couple different issues. On his ESA bill, we saw that. We also saw him asking Chairman Senator Fields to please hold a hearing on HB 800. And I think in a weird way, that is, when you disagree with him, it's sort of refreshing to people to see a hands-on approach. And not being afraid to lose, right? Like he comes downstairs, he lobbies on something. Maybe he doesn't get what he asked for, but he does it anyways. There is kind of something sort of refreshing about that instead of only coming down when you've already won to see the people downstairs on the first floor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he kept his agreements with the trial lawyers.
Yes.
Which isn't customary for a Republican governor, and he kept his agreement to create a second majority black district.
He did, and still handed what I think the insurance industry can claim as a victory to them as well. So playing some political cards very wisely during this session, and never getting so far dug in on an issue that he couldn't find a way to save face when it didn't go the way he wanted, you know, even on this convention. We're talking doing a special session instead now.
Yeah, well, he didn't get his way on the Constitutional Convention. So what's the next move?
Well, the Constitution allows for him to try to call a special session of the legislature and to limit that call to specific areas of constitutional amendments. And I think he's probably going to give all these legislators who, frankly, what I heard around the building a lot the last week, especially from male legislators, was that their wives were going to leave them if they did not come home pretty soon. This was supposed to be a part-time job, and they've been in Baton Rouge pretty much solid since January. So I think he knows, okay, let's give everybody a minute to recharge before I announce anything.
Well, what about the husbands? Paula Jones' husband?
Well, I like to think about historical number of women we have in the legislature is that their husbands know better than to tell them when they need to come home.
you can say that.
I hope so. All right. It better be that way.
All right. Well, the Advocate today has three reporters opining about the session: Tyler Bridges, the Pulitzer winner, James Finn, and Megan Friedman. And this is how they put it. It says social conservatives won notable victories by securing approval to make Louisiana the only state to require classrooms to post the Ten Commandments and by barring discussion of sexual identity and gender identity in schools under the Don't Say Gay bill. They also passed the country's first law classifying two abortion-inducing drugs as controlled dangerous substances, penalizing possession of the medications without a valid prescription, though pregnant women are exempt. Others could get 10 years in prison. So if pregnant women are exempt, does this mean this is window dressing or is this the real deal?
Look, this is a bill about collecting the names of people who get abortion drugs, which is required for Schedule I medications. You know, if I want to go get a prescription for, some classification of drug that has an addictive quality to it, Jim, when I do that, they're going to put my name in a database saying that I did it, so they can make sure I'm not getting too much of that medication, or that I'm not doing it with an intent to distribute it or some other criminal intent. And what this is going to do is chill the will, I guess, so to speak, of people looking to get safe abortions, especially in instances of miscarriage. It's just becoming really dangerous to be a woman of childbearing age in Louisiana. It's becoming dangerous to be a child in Louisiana who might be a victim of rape. And it's becoming more dangerous every day.
Well, Jeff Landry believes he has the people behind him. And he's also been able to do these conservative moves without irritating people on the other side who supported him, because he made promises to trial lawyers and to the Black Caucus, and he kept his promises. He keeps scores both ways, doesn't he?
I think that so far he's done a good job of estimating how much political collateral he has, yes.
We'll talk some about what's happening on the national scene as well. Mary Patricia Ray with us up for This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana, another segment with Mary Patricia Ray, and then we'll hear an interview with Smiley Gray Anders Jr., who died last week, and less than 100 hours before his passing, he was with us. So we will hear what amounted to an exit interview. This would have been the 45th anniversary today of his column. But in our remaining time with Mary Patricia, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. This is Petra in North Baton Rouge, great name, asking about whether the closed primary, open primary debate continued. The debate continued, but there really wasn't a change, was there? We're going to have closed primaries for the federal elections in 2 years. That's the way it's working.
Yep.
It?
That's it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it comes back up, but I think if we see it come back up, it'll be because a deal has sort of already been worked out. No one's going to, I think, waste political capital on trying to pass this thing again without knowing the outcome in advance.
It affects Bill Cassidy. I don't know that he can win in a closed primary, but he's trying. He's suddenly become a Trumper. He had an overnight conversion. What happened to our senator who says this was a terrible verdict, the same man, and says he will vote for the Republican? He might as well just cough it up and say, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. But he voted to impeach Trump, which is interesting because he wanted the guy out. He voted for conviction on impeachment. He voted the guy, wanted the guy voted out, and he voted to uphold the election, which Garrett Graves didn't do that. Garrett Graves, John Kennedy, Clay Higgins, Steve Scalise, they all back their man. Now he's the man again, as the senior senator from Chicago by way of Baton Rouge. What's going on with Senator Cassidy?
Well, you know, Donald Trump continues to be a pariah for anyone who might have been a sort of common sense Republican. The shifting sands under their feet mean they have to constantly change their position on who Donald Trump is and whether he's a good man or a bad man. And look, you know, I'm a realist. I think I would be advising... If I was advising Bill Cassidy, I would be advising him to build a stable foundation under himself that shows he is not an anti-Trumper. Just try to check a box. It's going to be a hard box to check for him. It's going to be hard. You know, it's hard to erase his past positions. And you can bet that there'll be some far-right candidates pointing it out every day.
But this is a case in which it goes beyond a position. This is a mentality. And he doesn't share the mentality he did in 2 years ago. And I think we know why. He had a six-year term then. He thought Trump would be long gone, but Trump's still there. Trump's going to be there longer than Cassidy, perhaps.
And being one of 100 people that decide a lot of really important policy for our state and for our nation is just not enough anymore to convince voters that that is what they should be voting on, is how you will decide on the things that affect their life. And he's, I think, a realist to understand that he better get himself straightened out on the issue of Donald Trump.
Hallen Monroe, and I suspect Cassidy even thought of this, I'm sure he did, said he ought to just go all the way and become a Democrat. He'd have a better shot.
Oh, Lord. I don't know.
By the way, he was a Democrat for most of his life, by the way. He met with Bob Mann.
You know,
he beat Bobby Jindal in 2003, and then suddenly he wanted to become a lawmaker, and he had an epiphany, and he ran as a Republican for the Senate seat vacated by Jay Darden, and the rest is history.
My political consultant brain says I would definitely want to see some polling on and any party switches, and I think that if you become too much of a flip-flopper, nobody wants you. He probably does have a pathway with, especially with white women who are more
But in a closed primary as a Republican, if a hard right winger runs against him like Clay Higgins or Jeff Landry, or even a moderate like, supposed moderate, he's really not a moderate, but he looks and he sounds like a moderate, Garrett Graves. What about him? Would it be a better bet for him just to sit this one out and go against Cassidy in 2026?
Well, I think Garrett has a lot more choices than people indicate he does at this moment. Congressman Graves, my current congressman. And I think, yeah, there are a lot of choices available to him if he chooses not to run for Congress this year. That will become less of a choice if he does and he loses. So, you know, he's going to be doing the same math. There's a lot of polling in the field in the 6th Congressional District
right now. He can hold on to the $5 million he has and keep raising money and immediately become a candidate for the Senate for 2026.
Well, and he has the chops on things like coastal restoration and other federal funding to go be an influencer in that policy space for a few years, too,
but
in a big way.
A listener notes that Bill Cassidy endorsed Jeff Landry and, of course, Garrett Graves. Not only endorsed, but encouraged, coaxed, cajoled Stephen Waguespack, his buddy, to get in the race and spend $5 million and get 5%. So Cassidy on that
one. You know, I always see this in terms of a Jindal-Vitter split. And you've got the people that were the allies of David Vitter and very mm-hmm. much opposed to the people, the allies of Bobby Jindal, still kind of creating a split in the Republican Party. And if Bill Cassidy were to become a Democrat, surely a Democrat would run to the left of him in that primary and he'd have a problem there. And I mean, ever so slightly to the left is all it would take.
Well, but he would have money and the Democrats have no bench, as we know.
There's a guy named
John Bell Edwards out there, but then John Bell would be facing a Republican.
Sorry, but wouldn't that be so fun, Jim?
He might run. He might run.
He recently said at the Political Hall of Fame where you were sworn in, by the way, congratulations on that, that he said he was not out to pasture yet, and
that's right.
Quote unquote.
I think that we know what that means, that he's exploring options. He could run for the Senate. He could run for governor again, and we shall see. But he also can wait a little while, but can't wait too long. People have short memories. And that's why Donald Trump is the perpetual candidate. He, for the third time, will be the Republican Party nominee. And if he loses, he will probably be the Republican Party nominee again in 2028. He's the gift that just keeps on giving. But he was found guilty of 34 counts by a jury in his hometown. And now he has to regroup. But polls show he is still the favorite. Your thoughts? 21 weeks from today is Election Day.
Well, I think these convictions have helped him fundraise. That's very clear. They have awakened a base that maybe was a little sleepy on him. And, you know, I think there's a chance that this type of news on Donald Trump in some ways does motivate his base. But I think in states where he was very likely to already get all the electors anyways, you know, he needs some mm-hmm. math in places where he's got to convert all those electors in a few states that he's not currently pulling ahead.
Well, the star witness, the one who got the most attention anyway, was Stormy Daniels, and she was on the stand longer.
What a star she is.
Well, and plus, if people ridicule her and criticize her for being immoral, what about him? What about him?
Well,
I don't think there's much doubt that they had
a
relationship.
You're asking people to remove the double standard we've had since the invention of the plow made women the homemaker and men the, you know, macho field cultivators. And that double standard's never going away. But I love that Stormy reminds us of its existence every day.
Well, when she said he used Old Spice, that he was reeking of Old Spice when she spanked him, and that he used Pert Plus, the person who would know whether she's telling the truth is his wife. And his wife has said nothing about this. She's
his
nowhere to be
found. His current wife, the other one's under
wife,
the ground.
Yeah. His, mm-hmm. Marla's still with us.
That's true. That's true.
For those of us who like alliteration, Marla Maples is a nice name, yeah.
Oh, a lovely Hollywood name.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. And well, anyway, but Louisiana is going to go for Trump if he's breathing, and he will be breathing, I think. If anything, he's resilient. Those shots that they took at him, Trump Plaza, the other day from the back show that this guy is huge. I mean, he is at least 100 pounds overweight. And Biden, of course, is old, and he's not in his prime either, but neither is Trump. So we've got these two old codgers who'll be on a stage together on June 27th. Will this be the event of the season when they debate?
I think a lot of Americans that are already planning to vote and already know who they're voting for will tune in, and debates are becoming a more of a risk than a reward for most candidates. And frankly, for these two, high risk for both of them.
Well, Holly in the Garden District says Stormy Daniels, a former Stephanie Gregory Clifford, should be given the key to the city. There should be a Stormy Daniels Appreciation Day. She is the most famous Baton Rougean. I remember another Baton Rougean who changed his name, Johnny Rivers, the former Johnny Ramostello. We have a theme here, Rivers, Stormy. Well, a parade downtown, perhaps that would be apropos.
You know, we do know how to throw a party with a weird theme here in Louisiana.
We do. This would be Spanish Town on steroids, wouldn't it?
There you go.
And Holly also suggests, Renee and Robin, can we pull it up? Dennis Yost in the Classics 4. I remember this is like 1968 when I was a little guy, but I remember the song. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Stormy. So here we go. Let's hear it.
The sunshine, baby, whenever you smile, but I call you Stormy today. All of a sudden, that old rain's falling down, and my
what do you think?
Well, they don't write great songs about heartbreak like that anymore. I mean, that's a man in pain. That's a man in pain. I love it.
And what a great suggestion from Holly in the Garden District. Dennis Yost actually sounds a little like Trump, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, actually. Yeah, actually. He has that sort of like high frequency rasp thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we hope Donald's heart's not broken. Perhaps he loved her.
You know what? I always really sincerely wish people that I disagree with or that I find kind of abhorrent, like, well, because I think that's the only way you actually get rid of people like Donald Trump in terms of the toxicity of it is if they heal. Like, there's something wrong with him.
Well,
you know,
he's going to carry the Southeastern Conference, maybe Georgia. Maybe Georgia will go the other way, but onward, Donald Trump in the SEC. We're back after this. And this is Jim Inkster. We're listening to Talk Louisiana. Smiley Gray Anders Jr., the pride of Natchez, Mississippi, is with us. Most people don't know that he was born in Natchez, but grew up in Baton Rouge. And how did your family end up coming this way?
Oh, my dad was working with Swift & Company, the meat company, and he was in Natchez, so he was transferred to Baton Rouge for a better job. So we moved out here. Of course, I went to Struma and was LSU, and I knew they had a good journalism school, and writing was about all I was able to do. I was terrible at math and pretty much everything else. So I went on to LSU J School, and luckily got some very good jobs along the way. And I wound up at the Advocate in 73.
1973.
I was covering businesses. However, I was doing a publication for the Chamber of Commerce that's covered business in Baton Rouge. And they hired me. The Advocate didn't have a business desk at that time. So, and I loved it. I mean, I had a great time. I was working for the Manships. Very good people. Very good. You know, they took care of their people.
50 years last year was your anniversary with the Advocate. But Smiley, you have noted that your career goes back a ways. November 22, 1963, the day President Kennedy was shot, that dark Friday that changed the landscape of our world and certainly our country, you were at the Farm Bureau. You were at the Farm Bureau on Airline Highway, weren't you?
That's right. I was doing public relations for the Farm Bureau, which I did for about 3 years, despite the fact of knowing nothing about agriculture. Driving along, you know, I was on the radio, the car radio, and I forget what I was downtown for. But as we've told the story before, I went to the old Chris's Bar at North and 19th, and had a beer and watched it on TV, that horrible story.
If I remember correctly, when I didn't go there often, but it was a historic Baton Rouge location and had a lot of ambiance, shall we say, but didn't they have a separate window for black patrons?
Yeah, it was outdoors. They couldn't come inside. They had a window where you could, they sold liquor, too. It had like a small, you could buy it in pints and half pints. And black people could go up to the window and buy booze or buy whatever, you know, food. And I don't know if they probably sold cans and bottles of beer.
Isn't that something?
Buy beer, but they couldn't come inside.
Isn't that something, though? That was considered progressive, just the fact that they served black people.
Absolutely. I know Bernard's Sugarloaf House on North Boulevard had a was divided in two. The counter went all the way around at one side as separate interests for black people, and the white interests was on the other side. So it was a black owned business, and but they segregated. But at least they let them inside, you know. Which was, you think back about that, you hope we're making progress. Sometimes I wonder.
Sometimes. Collis Temple told me when he enrolled at LSU in 1970 as the first black basketball player, second black athlete in LSU history, that he went to one of those establishments in downtown Baton Rouge, a historic place, and he was told that we don't serve, and the N-word was used, and he said, that's okay, I don't eat them.
That sounds like Collis.
But you and I are of a vintage. You're a few years ahead of me, but
yeah.
Donald Trump reminds me of Muhammad Ali in this way. And you can ask a person about Donald Trump, and you can find out all kinds of other things about them by how they answer, the same way you could back when I was a kid and you would ask him about Muhammad Ali.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are all kinds of excuses for him, you know, it's like, well, he's not as bad as he seems, but I'm afraid he's worse than he seems, but not Muhammad Ali, the other guy.
But he's popular in Louisiana, particularly with white folks. He got, if you do the math, about 90% of the white male vote went to Donald Trump twice, and quite likely will go to him again in Louisiana. And some of these battles we fought 150 years ago seem to be in play today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think the politics of cruelty are winning out right now. I'm hoping that down the road it'll change. But right now it's really discouraging.
But Joe Biden, who was born on your birthday, actually a few years after you, but only a few, you know, I'm 66 now, and I don't know that I could handle the rigors of being president of the United States if I really did the job well. I could dial it in, but that's not the way you do that job if you do it well. What about somebody who, if Biden wins, he'll be 86 when he leaves office?
Right. So, I can handle being president at 86. I can. You know, I could do it. Nothing wrong with being 86.
You know? Nothing wrong with being.
I can trust myself. And, you know.
Well, we know you're special, Smiley, but both of these guys, both of these guys, Trump and Biden, got doctors' excuses to stay out of Vietnam. Biden with his asthma and Trump with his bone spurs. That was a searing time in our country, and some listeners have noted, Jim, you say we haven't gotten past the Civil War. Well, we certainly haven't gotten past the Vietnam War.
No, and you would think some good came out of it, but very little, except we got a lot of really, really good citizens out of Vietnam who came to this country and had really made their mark.
You're correct. But we also lost about 60,000 of our best young people, too.
Oh, what? Yeah.
What about Billy Cannon, born in the same year as you, August 2nd, Smiley's November 10th, November 20th. What about Billy Cannon's legacy? You knew him when he was a kid, and then you were on the sidelines on October 31, 1959, when he ran 89 yards to beat Ole Miss and Johnny Vaught 7-3.
That was bizarre. Yeah, Cannon in high school was just a mischievous kid, and actually a little more than that. He came from a rough part of Baton Rouge, and he was a rough kid. He got into some trouble, of course, but he was still in high school, and was always on the edge, you know, and was so talented that it was just unbelievable. I was spotting for United Press International's wire service that was competing with AP for a long time. I got paid $25 to go down with the photographer and identify the players and keep track of the yardage and all that kind of stuff. So we were right there on the sidelines when Cannon starts running, and amazing. People were just bouncing off of him like he was Superman or something. You know? And
he was going to score, and
Ole Miss was no slouch. I mean, they were leading LSU 3-0 at that time.
Yeah, that Ole Miss team was great, and they beat LSU in the rematch. But on the 45th anniversary of your column, what do you think the legacy of you in that column will be? You know, 45 years from now, people will still be talking about what was and how this guy did it and how he captured the fancy of the people of what by then will be the largest city in Louisiana.
I just kind of fell into it, and I think the real secret is not so much what I'm doing. It's the fact I've given the readers an opportunity to tell their little stories, because everybody's got a story. I mean, everybody has at least one, and some have hundreds. And so I've given them a chance to be part of the paper without having to die or hold up a convenience store. And so, I think just opening up the idea that people who, I don't know what they do, most of them, but they run the gamut pretty much of occupations and race and ethnicity and all that. I don't know anything about any of that. They just tell stories.
Everybody has a story.
Everybody. I mean,
you have captured a slice of life that only you could, and Louisiana has loved you in return, and I love you too. And thanks for being an inspiration, Smiley Gray Anders Jr.
Thank you.
That was conducted fewer than 100 hours before his death, and as you could hear, he still had his brain. His mind was special, and everything about him was special, and we will love him forever and miss him immensely. Smiley Gray Anders Jr. He used to come on this show every June 4th, the anniversary of his column. Today would have been 45 years, and also he would come every November 20th. He lasted 86 years and 6 months, and he lived life like nobody else, and he loved this community. He knew Baton Rouge like nobody else. Until tomorrow, for Robin Dow and Renee Martin, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.